Greetings in the divine love of the one sacred heart of the beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. So tonight our topic is 2012, allowing your heart to lead the way. So let's take a deep breath and relax. And as you take your next deep breath, just ride that energy from the very top of your crown right into the very center of your heart and allow it to expand in a concentric, ever-widening circle, a unified field. Okay? Take a deep breath. And allow that energy to ride right down in the center of your thorax, the center of your chest. And with your next breath, you're going to expand that heart space to synthesize and unify all of your chakras and centers of perception in a heart coherency field that's like a sphere in which your whole body is encompassed. Are you ready? Take a deep breath. And expand. And we ask the Lord of Love, the Christ Himself, to please minister to us tonight. There may be some who are listening who have never had their hearts opened. There may be some who are ready to go beyond where they thought they were open. There may be some who are going through the initiation of the broken heart, the shattered heart. There may be some who are actually quickening the Christed heart. So wherever you find yourself in this equation, the Lord is with you. The Lord who is the way shower into the innermost chambers of the Sacred Heart. All of the truly illumined men and women and the indigenous elders of this planet and other worlds have always said that the most important thing that could possibly be your focus at this time is the opening of the heart, the centering of your energy in the unified heart field, and the ability to walk through life in an impersonal love so great that it has transcended personal grievance, personal hatred, personal strife, albeit that is quite a tall order to fulfill. So let me say right here and now that the heart is one center that can only be opened by the kiss of the beloved. All of the pranayama and yoga and techniques and meditations in the world will not open your heart without the kiss of the beloved. So we'll call God, the Lord, the beloved, because when you experience the presence of the beloved in your heart, it could be likened to the kiss of sunlight that opens all of the petals and allows your sacred fragrance to waft forth of your true self, your true essence. And that, of course, could never be done by the machinations of the human, but only that which is the transcendental, that which is beyond the human, and that which has birthed the human with the sole intention of inhabiting the human biosphere with immortal love. That is the purpose that you have a physical envelope in time and space, to be walking love, to be the beloved in hue, man form, heavenly, universal love. So, do you know if your heart is open? Can you actually tell if it is open? Would you know the signs to look for? We're going to be looking at all of that tonight. But the elders and the mentors of our human life wave, at this time, the major focus is to open the heart of humanity. Because it's only if the heart leads the way that we are going to make that shift into the higher dimensional earth, the new earth, the fifth dimension, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, whatever your metaphor is, the ascended Christ consciousness. It's called many things. But the heart is what is your boarding pass, the opened heart. And living from that heart will enable you to pass through whatever comes down the pike in terms of what we may be experiencing as we progress deeper into this new energy field. There will be eddies, let's say, turbulence here and there, weather anomalies and disturbances. We've been experiencing that all along. Things will shift and shake and readjust. Various things will reflect in the natural what is happening in the supernatural in terms of the integration of the heart. So what will make it easier for you as an individual is to be all about removing any barriers that you can discern that the Holy Spirit reveals to you that poses a resistance to your loving. Anything that is held against another blocks your heart. So the first thing is, of course, as we focused on last week, is to forgive everyone everything, including yourself. And again, you need to do that with the Lord. Because only the Lord grants you the strength and the grace to bypass all of your ego and personal inadequacies through grace into a state of absolute loving forgiveness and acceptance. So don't think you have to do this by yourself. Everything from now on, you must walk out with the beloved. You must talk it out. Work it out. Allow the Lord to get inside your life and your heart and your mind and how you function. And ask the Lord to assist you to move into a loving relationship with yourself, with your brothers and sisters on this planet, and with all life. Open to the possibility of limitless love. Limitless love. There's no need to close down from all of the good that is waiting to catch you up and embrace you. So, we're talking about a synthesis here that involves a unified field of all of your chakras brought into the state that we call the Christ consciousness, but we could also call it the Buddha consciousness. And let's bring in both streams of the Eastern and Western traditions. Because in the Brotherhood, the Christ represents the love, that is wisdom, and the Buddha represents the wisdom, that is love, is compassion. And they stand side by side within the spiritual hierarchy, working as one with the sons and daughters of man. So let's not position any difference between those that represent God's heart through the different ages and historical periods of life and times. For every path that is one of love and compassion will lead you into the heart of God. That is the unified field of all the love and all the compassion that will ever be and continues to expand into infinity. So the heart is never confined. The heart is all-pervasive. It is the Chaitanya. It's the all-pervasive Avalokiteshvara, that which is the compassion itself, that has no form and no limitation, but can inhabit and indwell every form without limitation. So again, take a deep breath and just experience yourself in that expanded heart space. Just be heart all over heart space. And forgive yourself for judging yourself in anything that you have projected upon another. For to judge another is to judge yourself. So you only need to forgive yourself for judging yourself, even though it looks like there was another out there that had vexed you or offended you. It is just a mirror to something within yourself that you need to forgive and love. So we live in a world that is conditioned to operate from the ego mind. The ego, again, is the belief in separation from God and one another. It is based on fear, and it is actually the form of fear that takes its embodiment as the lower mind. And from that lower ego mind, we projected all of the wars and hatred and evils of our world. Now, there's a higher mind, but that higher mind we would call also the buddhi, or the divine consciousness, which, again, is a manifestation of the heart. We won't get into the petals of the sevenfold or the thousand-petaled lotus tonight, because it's a little bit beyond what I want to get into. But I want you to understand that we're not just speaking of an organ in the center of your chest, but a state of consciousness that is also one of the knowing of the inner self, the intuition. And that is not different from the heart that we're speaking of tonight. So the world and the world systems are based upon the illusion of scarcity and competition and one-upmanship, all which come from a position of lack and fear and limitation. And all of that is part of the ego that has kept us confined in a experiential realm governed seemingly by limitation and difference and so forth. So the heart is that which knows and understands. The heart alone has wisdom, not the ego mind. So without an open heart, the ego mind will care only to promote its own interests. It will coldly calculate how much it can gain for itself, regardless of who will have to suffer and go without in the process. So the ego is completely without compassion and empathy. And when man is operating out of the ego, he can actually descend into subhuman, brutish, and demonic levels, where he becomes dictatorial and cruel, and using and abusing and killing and maiming, and doing whatever he has to do to promote his own selfish demands and self-serving agendas. And so we see that in the world. And that is what each one of us that would like to be part of this new dispensation, that is what we need to opt out of and to consecrate into living from the heart. In fact, There is a whole science on the planet now. The Heart Math Institute is one that has actually developed an ability to kind of like biofeedback that lets you know when you're in heart coherency, so that it can actually be measured. And this is a new science of energy harmonics that is more and more demonstrating scientifically what esotericists and mystics have always known. And having said that, we must now move directly into the experience of it. And to do that, again, we must come to the Lord like a little child and ask that that heart be transformed by the Divine Spirit, and that we be taught of the way to walk in unconditional fellowship and love with all life. Now, you might think, surely no one would want to live any other way. But unfortunately, according to the Masters, there are many such people on Earth who neither know nor even care to know any other way but the way of the ego. Now, these people are the ones, the very ones today, that are kind of losing it. They're becoming increasingly chaotic and acting out in very bizarre ways, and becoming very violent as the vibrational rate of the Earth increases. For they're not able to tolerate this increasing velocity of spiritual light and love that's impacting the Earth. So these people will continue to self-destruct until there won't be any more on the Earth, nor will any more be permitted to incarnate on the new Earth. In fact, that's in place right now. So these souls that absolutely are not going to be able or are totally unwilling to have their hearts opened will need to await the next 26,000-year cycle to start over their process again. And this is all, you know, this is all part of nature's way of eliminating those who are incapable of adapting to a new cycle of manifestation. And the cycle we're moving into is the cycle of the Divine Shekinah. It's the age of the Divine Mother that isn't necessarily a woman, but manifests most clearly in our world through the Divine Feminine. And it is a receptive, loving, embracing, nurturing energy that governs this new cycle of manifestation. So to survive from 2012 onward requires an open heart. A heart that's opened to the love and light and compassion of one's highest self and nature. That would be your true spirit, your true soul, your true inner core essence, which is identical to that of God. So when the heart leads the way, it will often direct you to do just the opposite of what your ego mind would suggest. Often, your heart is what speaks first, and then the ego mind is the one that comes in and second guesses or doubts or throws up some form of opposition. So just notice that if you want to. For example, I'll give you something you probably can all recall having done. Let's say you encounter a destitute person, someone that's panhandling on the street corner for some money, for something to eat. Immediately, an open heart responds in some way and without a second thought. They'll give some money or offer to buy a meal for that person, or at least they will stop and offer some words of encouragement or maybe offer to pray for that person or at least to smile. They won't just walk by without you know, doing something. And that would be the first impulse. And that would be your heart responding and leading you. Now, the second thought is of the ego, where the thought is, I shouldn't give them any money because they'll probably just use it to buy more liquor or drugs or whatever. That's the ego. Who are you to judge? And who are you to care what they do with that money? Your job is to love, forgive, serve, and do whatever you can to make life a little easier for the people you encounter every day. And So the heart responds, and the ego resists. So you see, your heart always calls you to self-sacrifice in some manner, to put the needs of another above your own. And the divine call almost invariably seems to draw us out of our comfort zone and beyond our human capacity. And that's because to truly live from the open, compassionate heart, we must walk with the Lord. We must walk with the Beloved. That divine spirit has got to have been awakened within our heart in order for us to be able to live from the heart, in order for us to be able to pour forth selfless compassion. We have to be in contact with that selfless love that is the potential that each one of us was created to quicken and activate and embody. So the ego mind is a coward in that it will convince you to hide out in the closet of limitation and fear and lack, whereas the heart is always courageous. In fact, that's the root meaning of the word courage, which is to be of heart. To act with heart and full-heartedness is the meaning of the word courage. You know, I watched two very inspiring DVDs this week. That one of them was about the Italian father, Padre Pio, who bore the stigmata, the bleeding wounds of Christ, and lived in constant, terrible pain. And it was a pain that he actually prayed to endure on behalf of humanity. Now, I had no idea that he suffered so much. And he suffered primarily from the petty jealousies and slander, false accusations, and betrayal of his own fellow priests and monks. And yet his strength came from continual humility, self-giving, prayer, and absolutely impeccable obedience to the very ones appointed over him who sought to destroy him. Yet his perfect obedience and faithfulness and his humility caused some of his enemies to even repent. And, as often happens, eventually all the evildoers were revealed and Padre Pio's great free hospital arose to minister to the needs of the poorest. He was given, as a Benedictine monk, complete freedom from the vow of poverty. All the monies were allowed to pass through his hands because he had absolutely no selfish interest. And also he was released from the vow of obedience because he was proven again and again to be absolutely perfect in those two areas of his life. So that is a first for the Benedictine order, at least according to that DVD. Now, Padre Pio met and corresponded with a newly ordained priest who was deeply moved by Padre Pio's example. And do you want to know who that priest ended up being? Yep. Pope John Paul II. And that was the Pope who later canonized Padre Pio as an official saint of the Catholic Church. Isn't that interesting? So no matter what anyone said or did, Padre Pio humbly accepted it and simply continued to pray for everyone and submitted himself entirely to the will of God. You know, it made me absolutely weep and burn with a passion to overcome the areas where I'm selfish, where I'm self-serving, where I have ego, where I have resistance. If anything would inspire you, that would. And the second DVD that greatly moved me was about Mother Teresa and her call by God to live in the slums of Calcutta, India, and serve the poorest of the poor. And she also was an example of a life lived entirely on behalf of others, mostly the lepers, and the dying, and the disease, and those that were she picked up out of the gutter for the last, you know, a few minutes of their life in some cases, and the deformed and the abandoned children that she adopted and took care of. And, you know, her orders are throughout the world now where they're continuing on her work. Now, Mother Teresa was also an example of obedience and humility and self-sacrifice and poverty. And someone asked her why she valued poverty. And she said she loved poverty because in poverty she experienced freedom. I think that's really interesting. It's just about the opposite of the way most of us would think. And she said, when you have nothing, you are free. And she also emphasized the importance of joy, that when you are in your true divine calling, or your religious vocation, as she calls it, you will experience joy. And that reminded me of this statement in the Course in Miracles, where it says that your happiness and your divine function are one and the same. Now, Mother Teresa, if you can imagine, through the love of God, actually loved to pick out the worms of worm-riddled dying lepers and to wash their bodies and to hold them in her arms as they passed from this world, many of them experiencing the only loving embrace that they had ever experienced in their whole life. And from that, they would pass into the loving embrace of Jesus, who received their souls in death. So, although she always was a devout Catholic nun, Mother Teresa was actually bigger than any narrow religious definition. She was a universal mother to all. And in everyone, she saw only Jesus in what she described as his most distressing disguises. So you would say that every genuine saint, every great soul, is led by the heart and lives a life that is characterized by service and compassion. And each is a courageous exemplar of a pure and sacred heart. Now, there may be very few of us that are in that particular category of Padre Pio and Mother Teresa, but each one of us has a particular calling and vocation that God has crafted us and designed us to fulfill. So our dharma, our duty, is to find what God is speaking into your heart, into your soul, into your expression in life. You will know what it is because it will be an irresistible call and urge, and it will be relentless, and it won't leave you alone until you finally heed it. So pay attention to those things that keep coming back again and again as what you really feel drawn to do. And don't allow the limitations of the ego to block you. The ego will always ask, well, how am I going to pay for it, or I don't have the money to do this or that, or it'll always put up some material limitation for a limitless God that created everything and is the supplier of everything that's needed. Do you think for a moment you're going to be called to do something that God is not prepared to equip and facilitate and make possible for you to fulfill? Is he going to set you up for failure? No way, Jose. He's definitely going to walk you through whatever it is to prepare you, to position you, to empower you, to fill you, and to place you where you need to be to fulfill your divine destiny. That's why I always emphasize the importance of saying, of asking God for your highest divine destiny, the highest divine destiny that he's planned for you. There's going to be a permissive ego allowance that you can opt for because you have free will. You can choose a lesser path. You can choose to ignore the call of God. You can choose not to even believe in God or come into a spiritual path at all. That's the free will that you've been given by the love of God. But if you want your highest divine destiny to unfold, you're going to settle for nothing less. So this is something that you can pray for. And ask also that the Lord will show you what you need to forgive and release to him in order for your heart to fully be opened. you'll notice that any negative emotion, any anger, any resentment that you direct towards anyone will immediately close down your experience of your heart and your loving. Immediately, you put yourself in hell by your own choice of lovelessness. So that's why the Bible states that that perfect love casts out fear. There being two emotions, love or fear. So perfect love casts out all fear and all negativity that exists is fear-based and is emanating from the ego. So perfect love casts out fear. That's why you can go into 2012 and, let's say, God forbid, the economy crashes and suddenly we have no money or whatever, slot in your own worst fear. And the perfect love of God and the perfect trust that God will provide for you. God is not dependent on the economy that man created. God created a planet to be loved and shared as a garden without any need for money. It was man that created this stupid thing that now enslaves us that we call money. So money is just energy. It's intelligent activity. And we can act intelligently without that particular symbol just as well. So when you have that opened heart space, you're not going to tremble with fear when you see the things happening and collapsing around you, if that's the way it goes. It may and it may not. We may have some degrees of it. I mean, we may be through the worst of it. We just don't know. But we know that everything is shifting and changing with the choices that we make as individuals and our collective consensus as to what we will or will not embrace of. So the more of us that can be that powerful energy of love in the world, the easier we're going to make it for ourselves and everyone. Now, the ego must dissolve. You don't work on the ego. You don't really do anything with it. You allow the love of God and the grace of God to gradually reveal it and dissolve it as you offer it over to the Lord. Just like a piece of burning camphor, you are offering your life to God to be used in some way to serve and bless others. And that's actually the meaning of the arati ceremony, if any of you have been in a Hindu temple where they are waving the camphor flame in front of the altar or in front of one of the Indian masters. That symbolizes the offering of the ego, because by the time that camphor flame is waved, the little lump of camphor is totally dissolved. And that's how our ego has to be, as we keep offering our lives to God. Each time we wake up in the morning, we consecrate the day to the Lord and to the service of this planet and all life, and ask the Lord to guide us and to fill us with His Spirit and to be with us. And that's what melts that lump of ego. So have you offered your life to God? Last week we suggested that you might want to make a special consecration ceremony for yourself and offer your life in a special way to God in 2012. So have you consecrated your life in loving service? And a couple good things you might consider in your journaling. You might want to journal about what is my life devoted to. You could write on the topic, my life is about, or I am devoted to, or I live a life of consecration to. You know, begin to evoke yourself. Begin to draw forth your own knowing, your own decoding process. Nobody has to tell you why you're on earth or where you came from or what you're here to do. These are things that really you need to go into the fabric of your life and your heart and your soul and your innermost being and draw these things forth. And so journaling and writing, I like to write letters to God. I used to do that all the time in my earlier years. Those are really good practices. If you have a spiritual master, you can send the letters to your teacher, your master, or you can simply burn them or tear them up or put them on, in your Bible or under a picture of the Lord on your altar. It doesn't matter what you do with them. The process is for you and getting what is inside of you brought up more into your conscious awareness. So these are called spiritual exercises in self-realization, self-actualization, soul transcendence, whatever label you want to put on them. It's to actualize and realize and transcend the lower self into the highest and most divine expression that you can possibly muster. So, the minute you start to do that, when you're journaling, for example, the high self begins to reveal to you your true self and your true values and spiritual motives. It's amazing when you read what you have been writing, you will know that it came from a higher level of yourself because it isn't things normally that you think about. So asking yourself a question and then journaling and writing down the thoughts that come to you is one of those ways that the Holy Spirit will use to communicate to you. A real good example of that was our friend Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the amazing series Conversations with God. He was homeless and living on the streets for a whole year. He lost everything. And finally, when he was absolutely rock bottom at the end of his rope, he yelled out in really anger, why? What do you want from me? And God said, are you just venting, or are you really wanting to know? He was shocked. And he said, well, if you really want to know, all I really want is for you to be happy. And that began a whole series of him filling those legal pads one after another with these answers that just came one after another as he asked all the questions that everybody would want to ask if we had, conversations with God. But God told him, he said, I'm always having conversations with everyone all the time. It's just that very few people will take the time to stop and listen to what I have to say. Anyway, he went from being homeless and penniless to being the author of this incredibly life-impacting series of books called Conversations with God, and then they made a movie of his whole story, which is one of my all-time favorite films. They feature it on Spiritual Cinema, and you can get it also anywhere that they sell DVDs. But sometimes, everything in our life has to be broken in order for God to put it all back together in the way that he had intended it to be. And in serving our divine destiny, sometimes, the process is that we get, let's say, reconfigured divinely. So when we've lost it all sometimes and we can't fall any place lower, sometimes that's exactly what serves as the catapult that launches us into the very heights of our greatest cycle of achievement. And if you're going through the creaming process, my condolences, I totally know what that feels like. I've been there and done that myself. And, yep, there's a pony under that pile, so keep shoveling. I remember when I was in India, one of the interviews I had with Satya Sai Baba, I was a great, great Indian avatar. The woman asked Sai Baba for a pure heart, filled with divine love. And Sai Baba looked at her, really intently for a few moments, and then he responded slowly, "Yes, but first I must break your heart." So in India, again, you often see people breaking coconuts before an altar or an offering, as an offering to God. And the coconut and the breaking of the coconut is also symbolic of what must be broken and sacrificed, as that hard shell of ego that forms around us, that has to be broken, that husk has to be removed, so that the soft, sweet core and that delicious liquid, coconut milk, can be extracted. So the outer coconut shell is like the ego. It's like our hard-heartedness. And this must be broken in some manner. And eventually, that life, that ego-encrusted life, has got to be offered to God, so that the soft and sweet inner nature can be gotten to and expressed and enjoyed. So all of the difficulties that we go through, the disappointments, the personal losses, the pain, the suffering, all of that is part of the breaking of that hard shell of selfishness that has kept us ego-bound and miserable. I found that while it's initially extremely painful to have this ego shell broken and stripped away, the joy and the sense of freedom that comes with the sacrificing of the ego and the opening of the heart, it's like having a baby. You soon forget the pain. You just have such joy that you've given birth to this precious child. So it will be more than worth it, and you actually won't have much memory of the pain after it's over with. And it will be so worth whatever you have to go through to live with an open heart and to allow it to lead you. I'd like to share what I experienced in the process of my own heart opening. I think probably, while it's very individual, I think there's pretty much what I've experienced is what other people have reported experiencing too. So I'm going to share a list of them I've made here. First of all, when your heart's open, it feels open. It feels clear. You feel like you're available to life, to people, to love, to whatever is in your environment. You actually have a sense of open-heartedness. And there's no withheld energy anywhere. There's no resistance. And my heart opened, I would say, probably with the birth of my child. It was a process. It opened when I was 21, when I went to see the film The Robe, Cecil B. DeMille's film The Robe, about the Passion of Christ. That really revealed to me what he went through to save us and to birth his own divinity, express his own divinity, not really birth it, but express it on behalf of humanity, a sacrifice. And then at 22, when I almost died in the process of childbirth, and that really birthed my heart at the same time that I had that precious child. So sometimes it is childbirth or a near-death experience or a very impactful film like The Passion has opened many people's hearts and completely transformed their lives, so much so they've had to open a whole website for the thousands and millions of miracles that have occurred to people and their lives since they saw the movie The Passion. So if you haven't seen it, for heaven's sakes, gird up your loins and see it, get that film. It's hard to watch, and they don't soft-pedal what he went through, but it's an initiation of the heart. So one of the first signs I noticed was a feeling like my heart was so full of love that it felt like it was going to burst. So the first feeling is in the heart. And then, second, I had heart pains. In fact, the doctor 20, 22, 23 years old, put me in bed for 2 weeks and said I had heart trouble. I didn't have heart trouble. My heart chakra was opening, but it hurt. I had heart pain, sharp little twinges, and a feeling of tenseness and tightness around my heart, kind of like a spasm. And initially, it was very painful. But later, the pain goes away, and it becomes pleasurable, even ecstatic and orgasmic. And it's quite an amazing feeling when you're, you know, when the heart is just is completely open. Number three, your sensitivity increases to everything. You find you weep and cry for no apparent reason whatsoever. Everything moves and touches you, and often you cry over beauty or tenderness or whatever is poignant or beautiful or divine or, oh my gosh. Number four, you ache. You absolutely ache and long for something, but you haven't a clue what it might be. And you're so in love, but it's like your beloved is a moving target. Your love is focused here one moment, and then the next moment it shifts to another, and you haven't learned yet that you have love enough to include everyone as the beloved. You're still in the ego mode of thinking you have to be loyal to only one person, and then you get it all mixed in with romance. So it gets a little messy in that stage when you're trying to sort yourself out in the process of knowing how to appropriately love. And then, of course, you have people all over you. If you're a man, you have women crawling all over you. If you're a woman, you have men crawling all over you or trying to crawl all over you. You become a real mate bait at that point. But a mate is not what you want. A mate will come in God's own perfect timing for you. But what you're really after is to awaken to the divine beloved in your heart and in you as you. So eventually you discover that you have enough love to divinely, impersonally, unconditionally express that agape love, that divine love to everyone, until basically you get to a point where your automatic response to everyone is one of just goodwill and love, loving compassion. It's very impersonal. It's not personal. You know, when it's personal, you always got a little lack there that you're hoping that other person's going to fill. You've always got an agenda going. You want to possess, you want to own, you want to have soul rights to that person's body and that person's presence in your life. That's the ego. That's not love. That's romance. And that wears off after about a year and a half in most cases. So that's not what we're after. We're after unconditional, divine, impersonal love towards all. Number five, along with all the above is an enhanced awareness of beauty. You'll get caught up in silent awe at the simple beauty of nature, a child's innocent, sweet little face, the beautiful wrinkles in an elderly person's face. You'll just begin to see beauty everywhere. And it becomes a form of nourishment. It's like you have eye candy. Everything becomes that eye candy. It just becomes sweet. You have a sweet vision that looks gently upon life through the eyes of innocence and divine love and compassion. And you see the face of the Christ, of the beloved, everywhere you look. Number six, your dreams will become more and more spiritually uplifting. You may dream of Jesus or one of the masters or a saint or an angel, or see yourself ascending or dressed in a wedding garment. All of these are symbolic of union with, a closer union with the beloved. And I had many, many dreams of giving birth to babies, which again is the process of birthing your Christ self or your higher nature. Also had many dreams of moving into new areas and new homes. These are all symbolic of moving into deeper states of consciousness. You may dream of flying or climbing up a mountain, or crossing a bridge. All of these are metaphors for that inward journey. Number 7, you'll have a spontaneous desire to serve. Absolutely, you begin to live to serve. You'll want to give. You'll want to assist others. And you'll just be driven to embrace and love and reach out and comfort. And I found that it actually ached with the love that I felt and the desire. Anita had to express that love to others. And I remember experiencing the frustration because when I awakened, it was during a time when there weren't any human encounter movements. There was just traditional religion, but there wasn't any New Age. Nobody was awake. So that frustration that comes from having so much love and not being able to find a way to express it, because as a beautiful young woman, the men would misinterpret my affection, and people would become afraid or closed down or suspicious. They just weren't used to people living from the open heart back in those days. So that was another pain, was to have all of that love and really not have anyone to mentor me at that stage in my life and how to express it appropriately. Number 8, you'll become so tender that you can't bear to see anyone suffer or be abused. You know, you can't watch these horrible violent murder things on television or war scenes or horror and all the ugly stuff. They show so much of that ugly stuff on television today. I can't bear to watch it even for a second. Or ugly words. I mean, you just can't stand the ugly and the vulgar anymore when your heart is truly opened. It's very, very off-putting for you. Number 9, Your creativity begins to express. Wow, does it open up? And you'll find yourself, I found myself writing poetry, music, songs. I just express my love in all sorts of creative ways. You may be singing, painting, or getting involved in a religious path or spiritual pursuit of some sort. You could take off and go to India or Timbuktu or join the Peace Corps or go be a missionary. There's no end to the ways that you may express your need to break free of all of the past and all of the confinements of your past. So, number 10, you want more. Whatever that is, you have a sense you want more, and you're seeking and yearning and ready. You know, to go beyond life as you have known it up to this point. And you feel so restless, it's almost like if you've ever had spring fever, you feel expectant and excited and enthusiastic. You feel a call, a sense of destiny, and it's like your tank has got all this gas and you don't have any place to go. You don't have any sense of where you're going to go. God is still filling your gas tank, but you feel like you're all ready to launch off, but you don't have any directive yet as to where to go, because you have to expand into this new level and get it integrated and, you know, where you're able to function in it well and capably before you're actually positioned in your next spot. So there's a period there of adjusting and being acclimated to this new higher vibration of the open-hearted state. And today we have the wonderful insight trainings that we offer here in Santa Monica, California, and also throughout the world, that teaches you exactly how to open the heart, how to be centered in the heart, how to live from the heart. It's all about the Awakening Heart. And you can look up Insight Seminars and find that coming to a place near you, and actually have a training now that will help you to do all of the things that I have just been describing that's taken me a whole lifetime to do. And you can get a good head start on it in 5 days. So at the 11th step, if you haven't already done so, you're probably going to meet your master. Usually this happens in a dream, or you could actually encounter your spiritual mentor physically. And you'll know who it is, and there'll be no doubt when you meet that person because, well, you just know. You know, if it's really from God, you very, very rarely ever have, at least in my experience, any doubt. You just know that you know because the heart doesn't lie. And you'll start to live a life of spiritual commitment and devotion and dedication and consecration. And you'll do whatever the teacher, your mentor, the Lord Jesus, many people experience getting born again in this process where they actually become a committed Christian and follower of Christ. But however your process leads you to the same Christ, the same love, however you're guided in that process, you'll find that you live life for that commitment from now on. And number 12, you'll live a life of love and service to the common good of all life. And you'll have a sense of wholeness and completion within yourself. You'll be both full and fulfilled. And you'll experience the divine everywhere you look. Everything will evoke a sense of the sacred and the divine. And you'll have a quiet, centered, and luminous joy that just glows with a warmth within your heart at all times and flows forth in goodwill towards all people. And you'll know that God is home in your heart and the lights are all on. And that's the process. Unless, of course, yours is totally different. But that was my process. So, let's take a deep breath and go out chanting, Anai Hu. Deep breath. You opens the heart. The Anai Hu, or Hu, actually opens the heart as you chant it. And that's a wonderful spiritual exercise for you to try if you haven't done it already. And I'm Commander Lady Athena, and God bless you. Happy 2012. Adonai.